go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It's a minute past the hour, a minute past 6 o'clock here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone on the last full day of winter 2015. Winter going out, kicking and screaming. Earlier today, I was out in the side yard screaming at individual snowflakes. Do your damnedest, you little bastards. Spring starts tomorrow. Indeed, indeed it does. And in fact, I'm pretty sure we know exactly what time it does, but I don't happen to have that information at hand. That's okay. Anyway, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday at the Horn. This day, of course, is dedicated to, well, to those right-wing engines of intellect who make us go, oh! In other words, to stupid. Yes. And, of course, headonradionetwork.com is our home. That's where you run over should you happen to want to join in the conversation this evening in a real-time chat room kind of fashion. headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Jug of Punch. Good evening, Kathy. Good evening, Paul, and good evening to Sparky in his moderator manifestation as Man Cave. Congratulations, by the way, to Barbie, who informed me earlier today that she has found a little golden retriever puppy. Yay! It's just a wee thing, though, and cannot leave its mother for another 7 or 8 weeks, but that's wonderful news with which to begin the evening's conversation. So a big horn hooray for Barbie. I asked her as soon as if she gets any to send photos of the little feller along. I'm sure. Oh my goodness, 1 week old golden retriever puppies. You could probably power the universe on the energy of cute being emitted. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. There, got that out of the way. Forgot that part. You, of course, can reach the program during the conversation portion thereof at 304-574-8178 or 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BOBKINCAID, at gmail.com, Bob Kincaid on Facebook, and, of course, at Bob Kincaid on the Twitters. Okie dokie? Yes. This is a listener-supported operation. We all know that, but I still have to say these things. We pulled up a little bit short last night, so the fundraising goal for the evening is $200. That would be 40 people at $5, 20 people at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, etc., etc. So, yeah, there you have it. Hopefully we will reach that and not go into Friday on the front porch with a hole to fill at the end of the week. So there we are. And a reminder, based on something said a couple of nights ago, if you are a member, and there are thousands of us, if you're a member of the Horn Family Commune congregation who has never contributed to help keep things going, it would be any time, but particularly this time, would be a lovely time to start. And it doesn't matter how much. 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, whatever. But the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com. And so too, and remember, the more, you don't have to fill in all those really sort of prying fields there, like your mother-in-law's shoe size. Sort of, no, you don't. You really, really don't. It just, it's a matter of getting to the next page, right? And, of course, if you wish to participate via the U.S. Postal Service, that address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, WV 25801. Well, damn, I just had news from News Ninja Carol Baker that she is being blocked out of the chat room because of a Java fart. Java is rather of a pain in the ass from time to time, and this would apparently be one of those times. So hopefully that'll get resolved, or, Carol, if you need help, holler. We have some Java fart experts out there. Oh, yay. Barbie tells me that there is a photo of the little feller out there, and she will be posting it in short order. And so, yay. Wonderful. No, let's see. Where? Oh, yeah. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. And remember, checks and money orders should never be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but should instead be made payable to The Horn. And that makes it easier for Boss Man Wayne to deal with them when he reaches into the echo chamber with his spider-proof glove on and hauls out the correspondence. Okay? So, hopefully that's the last that has to be said about any of that, and we'll be good to go in short order. Now, Thorn in the Side Thursday. Really. Yes. This is one of those things that rolled in after the program ended last night. I was made aware of it. And it sort of had, save for Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we don't call Thorn, we don't refer to Thorn in the Side Thursday by its initials because they're kind of, you know, lewd. I mean, there's MM, Moran Monday, and TT, Titanic Tuesday, and PMW, and FOTFP, Friday on the Front Porch. We don't refer to Thorn in the Side Thursday by its initials. It just seems, déclassé, perhaps, or just outré, or I don't know. You'll figure it out. But anyway, for this Thorn in the Side Thursday, I thought it might be fun to run on down to what Charlie Pierce refers to as the home of American sedition, namely South Carolina Stan, where dead fetus fondler Rick Brofromix Santorum recently showed up to talk to the faithful down there about that one in our White House. Oh, brother. I mean, really, get a net. What did the Baha? Message coming in from Devin. Of what flakes do you refer to? It was 60 degrees Fahrenheit here. Well, it wasn't here, Devin, and we had flakes that started out as sleet, and I was cursing individual flakes by name. You, Aloysius J. Snowflake, go to hell! Like that. Yeah, nothing stuck, but it was a reminder that the beginnings of seasons often resemble the ends of the previous one. Now that's it, but that's interesting, because Devon is not that terribly far away from me. But, yeah, they had 60, we had, 38. What the hell? Yeah. But anyway, back to South Carolina, Stan. The folks who invented treason in the United States, South Carolina, who started the Civil War, that ultimately got some 600,000 people killed, some of them Americans, some of them traitors. Well, it's 2016's presidential season is sadly already underway, and nobody is safe. That means that, especially Republicans are out running around talking to what is referred to as the base. It's all about the base. Anybody want to write a lyric? Yeah. And when you're when you're a Republican and you're talking to the base, that means you're talking to the people who do things like writing Obama is the Antichrist. I, for one, welcome our insect overlords on the back of their automobiles. Or put stickers on businesses in Austin that misuse the word A-C-C-E-P-T-E-D in place of E-X-C-E-P-T-E-D. We talked about that last night. And who talk about Kenyan Muslim usurpers and whatnot. Enough already. Bro Fromix, Rick Santorum, the dead fetus fondler. Well, he had some live ones in the audience there in South Carolina, Stan, in Oldie Charleston. Oh, yes.
Thank you. It is great to be back in South Carolina. It's great to follow my friend Ted Cruz. I will tell you, I just came from Orlando to a group called The Awakening, and the previous speaker to me was Rafael Cruz. So this.
Oh, well, Reverb Raffy Cruz, right. So this goes on and on and on. And it's the usual right-wing nostrums. He spoke for about 30 minutes or so, 20, 30 minutes. The usual brand of crazy, you know. But then it got to be question time. That's really the only. And by question time, we mean the time when the birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, libertarians, repiglicans, and generally all those far right wing proto fascists, actual fascists, and mega fascists, you know, the people who pick their teeth with their toenail clippings. We got to the point where they got to ask questions. At which point, a lady arose in the audience.
Virginia Ellisor, a retired school teacher.
Hold on, you really want all of this? Trust me.
Virginia Ellisor, a retired school teacher, lifelong political activist, and lifelong resident of South Carolina.
Uh huh. Now remember, this is going to become important as we. As we go into the body of Ms. Something or Sore, she's a school teacher in South Carolina. That's right. That's right. The little developing minds of little South Carolina school children have been in the charge of this woman. I was about to screw up something fierce. 14 minutes into the program, hockey puck. Get the hockey puck out. Put the hockey puck in. Two or three circles of duct tape for this one, and maybe even duct tape your feet to the floor to keep you from running screaming into the night. Here we go.
I'll ask you the same question I asked Senator Cruz, and I'll preface it by saying...
Okay, we're going to preface too. Oh, goody. And did you notice that... it could be her trying to get hold of the demons inside her, or maybe just the inner monologue, or the... theater, the ego, or the superego, or shut up, I'm gonna speak! Right? I'm just killing time till you get the hockey pucks in, trust me. Okay, Virginia, something sore.
Michelle Bachman, I think it was King, said that Boehner made a deal. My question is on defending this country. Thank you for what you do for national security. I'm concerned about stealing these boys.
No, there really are two or three people coming out of her mouth. Woo! And still, nobody's walking around the back of the... See, to you and me, this woman already sounds like she's probably not okay. But everybody else in the room, it's just another evening hanging out with the bizarre right wing. Yeah. Just pulling the question together is a challenge.
I'll preface it by saying, Michelle Bachman, I think it was King, said that Boehner made a deal. My question is on defending this country. Thank you for what you do for national security. I'm concerned about sealing these borders and protecting the United States. I've fought that battle all my life. Thank you.
Yeah, she's been lifelong South Carolinian defending the borders, fighting that battle all her life. Kind of makes you wonder how this former school teacher defines the borders of the United States, doesn't it?
And I'm losing. And it's because of...
Yes, you are. Oh, I guess you can't just get over the counter Thorazine darts in South Carolina, Stan. No.
I'm not getting help from my Congress. And anyway, Michelle Bachman and King, in an interview on one of the stations, said that Boehner made a deal with Obama back in September to be on board with his executive amnesty.
Now it's September to be on board. Are we going to use our Irish hard R's or our Southern non-rhotic R? Can't pronounce my R's or G's when I'm speaking Southernese. Hard to tell. But then again, when you got two or three people arguing for space inside your own mind and trying to talk to noted bro-fro-mix, dead-fetus-fondler Rick Santorum, well, it can get a little confusing, I guess.
The American people put the Republicans back in office in the House and the Senate, and the two things we asked y'all to do were shut down Obama's executive amnesty and shut down Obamacare. And you didn't...
And Rick's just sitting there, standing there at the podium, bro-fro-mix. He's trying to stay kind of starchy and ramrod straight, leaning his head a little bit, looking down at the podium, trying to pretend that this woman's a, well, God damn it, they're voters, okay? She's going to go vote for somebody. Maybe it'll be me. Looking thoughtful, looking pensive.
Let us down on both issues. Why is the Congress rolling over and letting this communist dictator destroy my country?
Communist dictator. So you saw her voice go up, and Bro Fromix, the dead fetus fondler, his head kind of pops up like a groundhog that's just been whistled at. You know, in Pennsylvania they call them whistle pigs. You whistle and the groundhog will go whoop and look right at you. Yeah. And still, there's nobody near her with a big butterfly net or anything. Just, because this is just your average, everyday garden variety white lady voter in South Carolina, Stan. These are the people who can be trusted with the franchise. Absolutely. I want to hear the screech again. I'm sorry, I just do.
We're shut down Obama's executive amnesty and shut down Obamacare. And you let us down on both issues. Why is the Congress rolling over and letting this communist dictator destroy my country? Y'all know what he is, and I know what he is. I want him out of the White House. He's not a citizen.
Do you love that? Y'all know what he is, and I know what he is, and I want him out of the White House. Whew. Was this lady in Austin, Texas a couple of nights ago? Because this is the... Well, never mind.
He could have been removed a long time ago. Larry Clavin's going to get the judge to say that the executive amnesty...
And meanwhile... While the word salad's just tossing in the bowl, Rick Santorum, the dead fetus fondler, is just sitting there nodding his head like it's on a spring.
Is illegal. Everything he does is illegal. He's trying to destroy the United States. The Congress knows this. What kind of games is the Congress of the United States playing with the citizens of the United States? Y'all need to work for us, not for the lobbyists that pay your salaries.
Amen.
Get on board with us.
Did you get the amen? It was kind of. It wasn't nearly at the volume as Mrs. Elihu Footsore or whatever her name is screaming at. But the Bro Fro Mix is right there. Amen in every word that she says. Really? Communist dictator. Amen.
Stop all this and get Save America. You know, what's going on, Senator Santorum? Where do we go from here? Ted told me I've got to wait now until the next election. I don't think the country will be around for the next election. Obama tried to blow up a nuke in Charleston a few months ago, and the three admirals and generals, he has totally destroyed our military. He's fired all the generals and all the admirals that said they wouldn't fire on the American people if you asked them to do so, if he wanted to take the guns away from them.
We pay pretty close attention to the news here, and we are certainly not minions of the for-profit media by any stretch of the imagination. But I'll be dipped. I missed that one. I missed the almost nuking of Charleston, South Carolina. Wonder if they were going to launch it from Fort Sumter, maybe. That'll show them. Yeah, here it is. Yeah, it's only 155 years, but it's coming back, baby. Pressed down and shaken together. Then he went on firing all them generals and all them admirals, and not, the New York Times didn't notice, Washington Post didn't notice. What's his name? Drudge? You know who this woman listens to, right? I mean, you can almost hear it from the stridency here. This is an Alex Jones listener. InfoWars. Prison Planet! Right? Yeah. Oh, that hurt. We have to get some honey and lemon. 2 minutes and 9 seconds in, and I don't know, maybe some folks in the audience are beginning to get a little worried about Mrs. Elihu Footsore or whatever. Oh, true, Carol, true. In Uncle Frothy's defense, Bro Fro Mix, in Uncle Frothy's defense, how often does he actually come face-to-face with someone batshit crazier than he is? That doesn't happen all the time. And I think some of those looks that he's given her are a sort of wondering admiration. Now, this one, we got a live one here.
Up a nuke in Charleston a few months ago, and the three admirals and generals, he has totally destroyed our military. He's fired all the generals and all the admirals that said they wouldn't fire on the American people if you asked them to do so, if he wanted to take the guns away from them.
Ma'am.
This man is a communist dictator. We need him out of that White House now.
Ma'am.
And the Congress of the United States is the only one. We've lost our Congress. We've lost our executive branch.
Now, Bro Fromix has ma'am, right. Now, anybody with even a tenuous grasp on reality at this point would say, ma'am, are you off your meds? Did you hear about this event and decide about a week ago to stop taking your meds? See, this is all news to people. Note coming in from Marty out there on the left coast. He almost set off a nuke in Charleston? Really? When was that? Well, she said it's just 2 or 3 weeks or months or... It's some time ago, in her own mind. Yeah. Ma'am. Ma'am, I need you to, ma'am, sit down, ma'am. You're not all home. Let's go and get you a bowl of shrimp and grits or something. And you can settle down a little bit. Simmer down now. Mm-mm. No, it's the response. After all of this, it's the response of Bro Fro Mix that really, really this is a big old poison cherry on top of the poop, on top of the, yeah.
Ma'am, I would ask you please to allow the senator to answer
the
question.
I got your question.
You've made the question clear. Please let him answer.
She had more to say, but that was probably one of them Obama minions that was making her to sit down and shut up. Go away. South Carolina in the house. But okay, so we're all ready now because Pro-Fromix is going to answer her question. You know, the one about what are you going to do about this communist dictator who tried to set off a nuke in Charleston, South Carolina stand just not long ago. Yeah, really, bite down real good on the hockey puck, please.
Okay, okay, first off, I take somewhat offense at referring it to you because I'm not a sitting member of the Senate, so I'm not taking blame for any of that stuff, right? I mean, they're...
What,
Edith, huh? Huh?
Which part of the stuff? Are you not taking blame for not stopping Obama from nearly setting off a nuke in Charleston? Oh dear.
But I will tell you this, you've hit on one point that I absolutely agree. This is a complete lack of leadership.
She's hit on a point with which he absolutely agrees that there's a complete lack of leadership. Now, I don't mean to just repeat the audio, but that's worth pondering. She didn't say anything about there being a lack of leadership. She said John Boehner done sold him down the river. Mm-hmm. Didn't say anything about there not being any leadership. She talked about nukes, generals getting fired, and admirals unwilling to fire on the American people getting fired, and Bro-Fromix agrees.
The bottom line is that I can tell you when President Obama issued that executive order, I don't care what the executive order was about, when he issued an executive order or executive action that said that he's not only not going to enforce the law, but he is going to actively change that law and make new law and be able to act and force the agencies to act in...
Now, I remember signing statements under the Bush administration. Do you remember signing statements under the Bush administration? Yeah. Oh, dear God. I don't know if I've got the courage to look. News Ninja Carol Baker has found Crazy White Lady's Facebook page. Virginia Ellisor. Mm-hmm. Oh, my. And she is all kinds of worked up. Oh, former FBI chief admits chemtrails are real, and then he is poisoned and dies. Let's see. I just activated my subscription. Oh, look, there's a picture of Dinesh D'Souza. Mm-hmm. My Christmas wish, Obama impeached. Man, this is good stuff. Somebody help me here. If somebody walks up to you and says that communist dictator at our White House has got to be removed because he just a few weeks ago wanted to set off a nuke in Charleston, what's the response to that? No, he didn't. No, he did not. He absolutely... Oh, you must be with the Illuminati, too. Have you been snorting chemtrails? Doesn't matter. Sometimes the only decent and honorable thing to do is to refuse to become enmeshed in this vitriolic, hate-filled, paranoid rhetoric, lest it wind up sticking to you like glue. No, not Bro-Fromix. Oh, hell no. No, he's going to talk about those evil commie you notice he said executive order, but then he changed it to executive action. There must have been a memo from Frank Luntz.
Obama issued that executive order. I don't care what the executive order was about. When he issued an executive order or executive action that said that he's not only not going to enforce the law, but he is going to actively change that law and make new law and be able to act and force the agencies to act pursuant to that law, he did something that, as you mentioned, the word tyrant comes to mind. That is not, the president does not have the authority to do this. It is the most dangerous, the president has done a lot of dangerous things. This is the most dangerous thing.
One of those dangerous things he did was being black in the White House for almost 8 years now. That's very dangerous for America.
The president done, because what he has done is set a precedent. He has set a precedent for how the executive can act unilaterally.
Wait, I think that precedent was set by George W. Bush, actually, when they started talking about the Unitarian Executive or whatever it was. You remember that, the Unitarian Executive? Yeah. Well, oh, well, whatever. I mean, I-O-K, I-Y-A-R, right?
We're already dealing, as many of you know, with the problem of judicial supremacy, where the courts think they can act and call the shots for everything on every issue, of which I push back against, and will be happy on a separate question to tell you how we need to do that.
Too bad there's so little time, because that's going to involve throwing out every piece of constitutional law and every holding of the Supreme Court, going back to Marbury versus Madison. Bro Fromex here is another one of these people who is mad at, oh, dear God, you know, he's... He's mad at something that happened in 17, or no, he's mad at something that happened in 1801? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But when all the leaders of Congress, Republican and Democrat, saw this president do that, they should have recognized how serious this was.
I mean, that's pretty serious when all the Democrats and Republicans see that the president's about to set off a nuclear device in Charleston, South Carolina, and they do nothing. Do nothing, I tell you. You see, he still hasn't said anything about a nuke not going off. Mrs. Elihu Footsore, Virginia Nettlesore, Ellisore, that's her name, Ellisore. She's going to go away. Being able to say, well, Rick Santorum heard my question, and he never not once said that one in our White House, the Kenyan Muslim usurper, wasn't going to try to set off a nuke. That means it's true.
This is not just another political issue. This is not, and I'm going to repeat, this is not about immigration. Oh, yeah, it has obviously has a lot to do with immigration. But the bigger, more serious issue for freedom in this country is a president who has now established a precedent, then he can decide what the law is and change it irrespective of what Congress does.
Even though, having mentioned Marbury versus Madison a few minutes ago, even though Chief Justice John Marshall did declare that the Supreme Court of the United States was going to be the final arbiter of whether things are constitutional. Now, when Bro Fromix here says that judicial supremacy means courts can rule on anything they like, he's just flat out lying. And I think this clown actually went to law school. Maybe I'm wrong. But that's not judicial supremacy. No, that's judicial review. Because the Supreme Court is the final word on what the Constitution means and whether or not laws are in harmony with the Constitution. So they can't, and in fact, there's arcane stuff you learn after you've had your first cup of coffee in law school, arcane stuff you learn about ripeness. In other words, a case has to be The controversy has to be fully matured before a court can hear it. There's justiciability. Is this something a court can actually rule on? For instance, which way the toilet paper should be put on the roll? It's probably not justiciable. It's a matter of preference and opinion. And then there's mootness. If a case is already resolved by the time it gets to the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court's going to say, screw you, it's over. Because the Supreme Court does not have enough time to engage in intellectual games and futile acts. So we got all of that going on there, which basically means that there's a lot of times, my God, the Supreme Court turns away a lot more cases than it gets involved in. But because he is obviously an adherent of Fields' third commandment, don't smarten up a chump, he's not going to smarten up the rubes. What was that quote from a couple of years ago? Was it Santorum himself who said, we're never going to have the smart people on our side? You've got to play to the stupid if you're going to play to the birthers, birchers, tenthers, baggers, and booger eaters. You have to play to their fears. You have to play to their prejudices. You have to play to their ignorance. Can you imagine for a minute, I try to have a little fun with stuff. I clown around a little bit. But can you imagine Bro Fromix there trying to explain judicial supremacy and the concept of constitutional review to this bunch of people who are descended, 3, 4, 5, 6 generations away from a gang of people who committed treason against their own country? And Virginia Ellisor has the nerve to stand there and holler about Obama being a communist dictator when her great-great-multi-great-grandpappy probably committed treason against the United States and took up arms against it? There's a lot of those old families down there still got old multi-great-grandpappy's cavalry saber or his musket or maybe even the final remaining shreds of his old butternut uniform. And they gather together every year and celebrate treason. And here's Rick Santorum from Pennsylvania. Now, to be fair, his people got here after that little dust-up was over, so maybe it doesn't mean as much to him as it does to some of the rest of us. But here's Rick Santorum, who won't even raise his hand against outright stupidity, and then turns around, not only not having raised his hand against it, but builds upon it.
Ladies and gentlemen, had I been in leadership, and I was at one point,
until the people of Pennsylvania wised up and threw your crazy ass, no good, sorry, fetus frightening butt out of the Senate, but that's another matter.
I did, in fact, call members of leadership and ask them. Immediately I called him. I said, look, you cannot treat this like any other issue because it is unlike any issue we've ever dealt with.
Really? It's unlike secession. It's more serious. I mean, it's inherent in what he says there. It's more serious than secession. It's more serious than nullification. It's more serious than the disenfranchisement of millions and millions of American citizens. It's more serious than the ongoing effort to deny women the vote. Yeah. Unlike any issue. Why is it unlike any issue that we've ever faced before? Because it's an issue that's been raised by a kind of president we've never had before. That one in our White House.
This is the unraveling in as bold a place you can do of the Constitution of this country. And so I said to them that I would shut down the government of the United States. I would announce it, that we are not going back into session. We are not confirming anybody. We are not passing any bills. And we are going to have hearing after hearing after hearing on the unconstitutionality of what this president has done. We are going to focus single-mindedly
We're going to let grannies go without their Social Security checks. We're going to let our soldiers starve in the field. Because that's what he's saying. They like them some treason down there in South Carolina. Maybe sometimes with a little bourbon caramel sauce across it.
And we will challenge Democrats to stand up for their own oath of office, to stand up for the body in which they serve in, instead of letting this president neuter the people's house, to stand up...
Really? Really? Neuter the people? Really? We're making castration analogies now? What's he been running around with Joni Ernst? Answer, probably.
Up and say, no, that is not your purview. I agree with what you're doing, but that you can't do that this way. Even the president for years said he's not an emperor. He can't do this.
Implying that at some point in time, he shifted gears and decided he was an emperor. Emperor Barack the First. Blessings upon him. Robert in Morgantown noting, hey, Bob, don't forget religion. Nothing makes you stupider faster than religion. Yeah.
But they didn't lead. They looked, and I'm telling you, I've been there. Here's what happens when you get to Congress. You worry about making the trains run on time. You worried about moving things and all your other responsibilities.
And you worry about making, well, I mean, not if you're a Republican. You want to kill Social Security if you're a Republican. But if you're a responsible member of the legislature, you worry about the common good, making sure that everything continues to trundle along as best it can. Because we can't make things better because you've got people like Bro Fromix, Uncle Frothy, Rick Santorum, the Fetus Frightener in office.
You don't step back and sometimes see the forest for the trees.
That's about enough. And that's why Rick Santorum and Virginia Ellisor. Why does her name remind me of something out of the Lord of the Rings? Maybe someone who served Saruman or something. That's why they get pride of place here in this evening's Thorn in the Side Thursday. But pride of place doesn't mean it's a solo act. Oh, no. No, children, no. Mm-mm. Because there's too much. Had I the inclination so to do, I could do one of those epic 3-hour filibobsters. And probably not, and probably wind up with more information. Oh, I did. Sorry, Marty. Marty says I left out man on dog Santorum. And of course I did, and I apologize, for he hath many names, Rick Santorum, man on dog being one of them. But no, I could do an epic 3-hour filibuster and still have material left over. Thorn in the Side Thursday gets that way sometimes. So we must, therefore, continue soldiering along. And Carol's right. She said, for as much as I detested John McCain, he had the testes to tell crazy people that Obama was a citizen of this country and he was not an Arab. Of course, then he let Sarah Palin off her leash. Well, that's what that whole dog and pony show is, and I think we know who the dog was and who the pony was, right? But speaking of off the leash, well, goodness me. Let's check in. We were back in a doctor's office today, and I swear, I don't know what it takes to convey the idea to these. And I want to know. I mean, is it the office manager who does this? Is it the physician, him or herself? You know what we need for sick people in the waiting room? Fox News. Nothing makes people feel better than Fox News. The other it was last night, wasn't it? When we featured that program over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda is really, really beginning to climb up into the booger sphere, with the crazy that just floats out from time to time. Yesterday, we had Nebuchadnezzar McGillicuddy, or whatever her name is, having a hissy over snow days, and the liberals trying it, right, sure. Sean, he's so cute. Right. Well, now, and we were sitting in the doctor's office when this foo-frah was taking place. There is, if you are not aware, another fraternity scandal brewing. No surprise to me. This time it's not SAE at OU. This time it's KDR, Kappa Delta Rho, at Penn State University, where they are. And you know what? I think maybe an apology is owed to Keith Olbermann out of this. You know, he said Penn State University is still pretty pathetic, and he got shut down for a week over at ESPN. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out he was right. They are pretty pathetic. They've got a fraternity there that has been maintaining a secret page of photographs of women in various stages of undress passed out. Questions about what has been done to said women, or you know, not really a lot of questions about the fact that the women being photographed without their consent, naked, passed out, is probably a violation of their rights. Without a lot of questions available for the asking, right? But no, it's not that cut and dried over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. And thank God we've got Andrea Tarantula. Remember, she's the one who said that Eric Holder runs the Department of Justice, quote, like the Black Panthers, unquote. Mm-hmm. Let's just check in, shall we?
Some defiant comments. Member of a state university fraternity at the center of a nude photo scandal. Students, faculty, and parents all condemning members of Kappa Delta Rho who allegedly posted photos of naked, unconscious women to a private Facebook group. But now one member of that frat chapter says the story was blown way out of proportion, telling Philadelphia Magazine, quote, everyone from Bill Clinton to your grandfather, every Greek organization in the nation does the same old stuff, what? Just as they have been for the entirety of human history.
Okay, so this gets included in the discussion, this quote from some member of Kappa Delta Rho, and apparently photographing naked, unconscious women is something that has been going on for, and this is a quote, the entirety of human history, unquote. I guess human history began with the invention of the camera and the photographic plate. 'Cause I'm pretty familiar with some of the cave paintings there in the caves of Europe, and there's lots of paintings of horses and ibexes or whatever, bison, oryx, yeah, and there's some handprints, and I don't know, are there some stick figures? I know there's some stick figure petroglyphs in the American Southwest and so forth. Some people insist on saying, well, that was put there by Irish monk. No. Shut up. But I don't recall any cave drawings of naked women passed out on fermented berry juice. So I guess that doesn't qualify as human history, or the people who wanted to paint horses more than naked passed out women don't qualify as human. It's got to be one or the other, right?
Manager.
Yeah.
Amy Phelps always knows her.
Stupid run on the... I hate those ads. Just a minute. Got to find the damn thing. Okay, maybe it's over. Good. So it's bad enough this clown is, and the Bill Clinton reference. Well, you know the political bent of whoever wrote this. Everybody from Bill Clinton to your grandfather. You know what? I'm pretty sure my grandfather was not taking naked photos of my grandmother passed out drunk. For one, because my grandmother never so much as tasted the first molecule of alcoholic beverage. And I don't think they had roofies in 1920. Your grandfather, my left-hand... But anyway...
The fire of indignant, misplaced self-righteousness that looks to ruin people's lives and unjustly ruin reputations is the abuse and violation that should be at the center of this discussion, not the humorous, albeit possibly misguided antics of a bunch of college kids.
Oh, that's what this is. Well, it's kind of like when George W. Bush refused to answer questions about the fact that he was coked out of his mind for a big chunk of his life by saying that those were youthful indiscretions. And we can't practice the politics of personal destruction, right? Yeah. In other words, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. Or I-O-K-I-Y-A-Y-R. It's okay if you're a young Republican.
I mean, this is amazing to me. If I have two sons, if this was my son, I would drive to that school, I would grab him by the collar, put him in the car, take him home, and try and figure out where I went wrong as a parent, that he could think that this is the media is self-righteous for attacking this and that it's not immoral what was done. I mean,
you warm my heart when you say that, but you know our children are going to have influences beyond our reach.
They
and I think I feel just like you do. But I think Penn State has especially the spotlight on them after everything mm-hmm. they've been through. And I want to lean in your direction because you're from Pennsylvania and you know the history of that school.
Well, and I was in a sorority and intimately involved with the Greek system.
Goddess of irony. Never sleeps. Thank you. Thank you. That might be a little bit of TMI there, Andrea Tarantula. But thanks for sharing. Do continue.
At Lehigh University where I went. And I know that their defense is awful and not justifiable at all. But when they talk about the fact that frats do this, they do this. Girls who get drunk at fraternities and pass out, whether it was a disposable camera when I was there, guys are going to take...
And Andrea, do you want to tell us why you would reference the disposable camera? No, let's don't.
Their picture. Things are going to happen. You're going to get a reputation. It's not right. The difference, though, Melissa, is now with social media, you can post these things online. And so it's horrific. But look, guys...
Okay, so blah, 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 sort of bad. And then we come to the but. And you know this is where the stupid is really going to enter the fray. But what, Andrea? But what?
Can be pigs, and they do this kind of thing, and it's not right, but I remember it was happening at our school. If a girl got drunk and passed out, they took a picture, and the picture was circulated. My big brother said, never get wasted, blackout, and pass out at a fraternity. Also...
What wonderful family advice they must give in the Tarantula family. Don't get drunk, passed out, wasted, and blackout at a fraternity party. Do that back at the sorority house. Well, okay. Thanks, bro.
So the next day,
the girls shouldn't get drunk and pass out.
oh, girls shouldn't get drunk and pass out. You know, this is one of those moments when I realize that Morning Joe really does belong on Fox News. Because rap music causes fill in the blank. That's a Fox thing, isn't it? See, it's all these girls' fault. I mean, the little tramp walked in the door there at KDR. Somebody handed her a draft beer. She didn't know there was a roofie in it. And the next thing you know, she's just wandering around without any clothes on, little whore. How do you make an argument like that and have even a shred of common human decency? Well, the easy answer is that this is Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and it's Andrea Tarantula talking, and therefore, well, there ain't any. Let's go back just a little bit. Okay, continue.
Well, if a girl got drunk and passed out, they took a picture, and the picture was circulated. My big brother said, never get wasted, blackout, and pass out at a fraternity. Also,
so the next day,
the girl shouldn't get drunk and pass out.
When you're uploading a picture to Facebook, when you're leaving it there, when you're sharing
it,
the next morning in the light of day when everyone's sober, and when you're going and you're defending it and you're saying these are just antics, it's not immoral?
Yeah, that was wrong. They should have not said that.
Oh, okay, at least we've got some moral clarity. That part's wrong. Saying... saying that these are just college hijinks, that part's wrong. But it's just as wrong for the nasty little vile girls who didn't have big brothers to tell them not to get liquored up and black out and pass out wasted at a fraternity house. It's just as wrong for them to do that. Because Fox...
Ways aside, I want my daughters to meet your sons.
Yeah, I think the school has to do what they're going to do. But when you get kids to the point that they're this age and they think this is not immoral, that it's just normal antics, that they're not saying, Andrea, like, you know, we were so hammered, we did this thing, and now we're embarrassed, and it probably wasn't right.
The next
I mean, they're defending
it.
Let me just clarify very quickly before the feminazis tar and feather me. I am not defending.
Oh, how sweet. Andrea Tarantula used the term feminazis. Oh, I wonder if... probably not. But you almost think that she's the bastard child of Flush Flimball, because that's Flush Flimball's word now, isn't it? Feminazis. Before the feminazis tar and feather me. Feminazi. See, and all these pretty women... sitting there on that set, very well paid, all of them, are wondering where. Well, I mean, obviously that's not right, and they don't have the intellectual wherewithal to wonder for even a moment where the impetus, where the influence for this kind of behavior comes from. They just say, well, you know, now they've got. I mean, back when I was blacking out and passing out in college at Lehigh. We had disposable cameras, and that's how they took pictures of me naked and drunk and passed out. But now there's social media. So it's just Instagram's fault. It's Facebook's fault. It's Vine's fault. It's Snapchat's fault. It's Twitter's fault. Maybe, Andrea Tarantula, it's your fault. Maybe it's the fault of people who use the word feminazi. Maybe it's the fault of people who think that women that women and men who stand up for the right of women not to be raped, the right of women to have absolute sovereignty over the workings of their own body, who believe that women should be paid equal wages for equal work, yet referring to us as feminazis, maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe talking about women as though they are nothing more than baby-bearing vehicles is part of the problem. Maybe the guy who signs your check, Andrea Tarantula, Roger Ailes, maybe he's part of the problem. Maybe Andrea Tarantula, Rupert Murdoch, who purveys... I mean, There are more short skirts on Fox News than the and News TV Radio Rwanda. There are more short skirts there. There are more jiggling breasts on Bill O'Reilly's program than there are in prime time of some entire television networks. Maybe that's part of the problem. But, you know, Plato said the unexamined life is not worth living. And that pretty much rules out Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, and the people who work for it as living any kind of meaningful lives, doesn't it?
It probably wasn't right.
The next
I mean,
day.
They're defending
and
it.
Let me just very quickly, before the feminazis tar and feather me, I am not defending these boys on the fraternity. It's disgusting, and their excuse, there is no justification for it. However...
See, there's always a but or a however. Carol noting... She jumps to label any woman who would dare disagree with her as a feminazi as a way to silence women. If you take so much as a drink, it's your fault. If you get raped, it's your fault. If nude photos are taken of you, it's your fault. Men are never responsible for their behaviors. And Carol's right. But again, don't think for a minute that these people who get in front of the camera, and obviously Lehigh University is not a place that admits or turns out stupid people. These women are intelligent. Well, most of them. I mean, you know, Elizabeth Hasselbeck isn't. Hasselbeck. They are visually lovely. They are presented in the most positive manner in terms of appealing to the viewership. But don't think for a minute that they don't know who their demographic is. Andrea and Ezekiel and Frank, whatever her name is, they all know who they're broadcasting to. They know they're talking to sexagenarians and septuagenarians and octogenarians and nonagenarians who are absolutely loaded down to the ground with antiquated right-wing prejudices, bigotries, and biases. And they play to it. That's why Andrea Tarantula can say that she knows she's going to be castigated by the feminazis, but...
Feminazis tar and feather me. I am not defending these boys on the fraternity. It's disgusting, and their excuse...
Except she was defending it because she said it's the fault of the women who get drunk.
There's no justification for it. However, it does go on, and so people should be cautioned. Everybody's got to take responsibility.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Really? The woman who passed out or fell asleep, sometimes it's just a matter of having a few too many on an empty stomach, you get tired, and the brother from the fraternity will say, well, baby, you can come on up. You can just fall asleep on my couch. It'll be all right. I won't let anybody in. And trusting, she does. That's her fault, according to Andrea Tarantula, proud daughter of Lehigh University.
There's nothing to justify this behavior at all, but frats have always been frats. What was polarized before are digitals now.
That's
I'm not
right.
A
bullshit. Frats have always been frats. I don't know who this guy is. I don't much care. No. As I said before, I actually know the history of these things. Jim was right the other night. The first one was Phi Beta Kappa. It was founded at William and Mary University. And it was it morphed into an academic honor society. But most of them were social organizations, because the curriculum at most colleges was largely liberal arts. It was Greek and Latin. It was theology. It was the great works of literature and the early outstanding works of science. And so, in the case, for instance, of my own fraternity, six young men gathered together in a cabin in Canonsburg, Pennsylvania, and they all just happened to be Freemasons. Okay? And they were largely from the Midwest. And they gathered together as a debating society, a reading society. And they studied together. And perhaps, in fact, they did, I don't know, drink some beer, some liquor together. We're talking about 1848, when this most of this country was drunk off its ass. Right? And I suppose there were some hijinks. But mostly it was white, male, privileged role-playing influenced by the ancient world. And, you know, the word fraternity even develops out of the French Revolution. Liberté, égalité, fraternité. Fraternity, brotherhood. It has not always been like this. One of the early bumps in the development of the fraternity system was something called the Snowball Rebellion, when a bunch of hijinky feeling young white privileged males can't remember which college now, but they barricaded the door to the academic building with snowballs during a blizzard or something, and were roundly and soundly disciplined for doing it. Right? But all things evolve. Populations of living things evolve. And organizations evolve. And that whole debating society model evolved, and it evolved into a much more social function. It absorbed the politics of its time. At one point, the fraternities got big enough and strong enough, in fact, that they had clubs, for instance, in New York City, where young men going off to the Great War 100 years ago would socialize and have drinks before getting on the troop transports, perhaps to go away and never return. Then hazing developed. And for an idiot like this to say, as it was then, so it is now, thus it shall ever be, no. Because to say that is to say that a problem is insoluble. That it can't be made better. That it can't be eliminated. And if that is in fact the case, then the only real answer is to do on a national level what several colleges did on individual levels, and that was to get rid of fraternities altogether, which might be the very best idea yet. Because if that's what this has come down to, that places like KDR and SAE and Phi Gamma Delta, mine has had its own fair share of problems, horrible problems. Well, if that's what these are, then what academic purpose do they serve? And I think that's a fair question. It's about 10 minutes past the hour. Robert in Morgantown noting, wonder how Fox would react if it were the girls stripping drunk guys and putting their penises on Facebook. Guys shouldn't get drunk? You know, turnabout, fair play, sauce for the goose, sauce for the gander, that kind of thing. Yeah. Well, no, then at Fox it would just, well, boys will be boys. Yeah. So, yes, here at 10 minutes past the hour, I'm going to close the filibuster. I will note that 70 minutes into the program, we remain at $200 for our evening's fundraising goal, $200 to stay even with the week. And any help is good help and much appreciated. Phone lines are open. 304-574-8178 is the first number. We often call that the Skype line because it comes in through the Skype account and on the Skype computer. But you don't have to have, you do not have to have Skype to use it. Okay? 304-8178. The Gizmo line is 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. Okay? You can reach the program Skype to Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn is that contact. There's all kinds of different ways for you to get involved in the conversation because, well, the whole reason for this existing is that it is conversation radio. It is all of us. And, you know, new callers are always welcome as long as you're not a right-winger, as long as you're not a birther, deather, ninther, tenther, bagger, booger-eater, libertarian, bircher, or Republican. Your input is more than welcome. So we will take a break. It being Thursday and all, we have the Green News Report. And, well, that's where we are. Fire them up if you want to. The phone lines, you know. Right. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's Thursday, March 19, 2015.
There comes a point of no return.
No more Mr. Nice Guy. Obama takes new actions on climate change.
We owe it to our kids to get this right.
New rules for fossil fuels on public lands. It's official. Winter 2015 was the warmest winter on record. Plus,
Europe's thriving solar power industry apparently didn't fully consider one minor factor.
Actually, they did. Solar eclipse in Europe will be a test case for a solar-powered future.
All of those test cases and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
In some cases, you have elected officials who are shills for the oil companies or the fossil fuel industry.
In some cases, Mr. President, this is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, almost 100-degree temperatures out here in California over much of the past week in March. So I'll just sit back and cool off a little bit while you give us the good news of today's Green News Report.
Yes, and sorry about that in advance.
Oh, boy.
It's official. This was the warmest winter on record globally. That's according to NOAA. January and February 2015 were the warmest period for the planet since record-keeping began in 1880. Every region on the planet saw above-average temperatures everywhere, except for the northeastern United States.
Exactly. They didn't feel it in Manhattan, where the media was located. It was cooler than usual, so it never happened.
And also in Washington, D.C., where the climate change-denying politicians are. If you were in the northeast U.S., you were literally in the only place on Earth that was colder than average.
The media center and the political center of the country didn't even notice what went on. Fantastic.
No more Mr. Nice Guy. President Obama is calling out climate change denying politicians in the pocket of the fossil fuel industry.
In some cases, you have elected officials who are shills for the oil companies or the fossil fuel industry, and there's a lot of money involved.
Obama issued several new executive actions this week to act on climate change, but in a new interview with HBO's Vice, he said it's really only a start.
When I'm done, we're still going to have a heck of a problem, but we will have made enough progress that the next president and the next generation can start building on it, and you start getting some momentum.
And to push that momentum, on Thursday, the president issued a new order for federal agencies to cut energy and water use in federal buildings, vehicles, and electricity.
Tyranny.
All agencies must cut greenhouse gas emissions 40% and get 25% of their energy from renewable sources within 10 years.
Fascism.
That will push suppliers and contractors, leveraging the power of the federal purse along the federal supply chain, to cut emissions and increase efficiency.
Tyrannical fascism.
The administration also announced new rules for energy development on public lands. According to Interior Secretary Sally Jewell, the new rules will increase renewable energy projects on lands owned by the public and tighten pollution and safety standards for the oil industry, including limiting methane gas leaks.
When it comes to these reforms, I recognize there will be pushback from various corners. No surprise. But I strongly believe that they're not only achievable with modern technology and science, but absolutely critical to upholding public trust to responsibly develop our natural resources. We've got to update these regs.
So we're talking about regulations for drilling on lands that are owned by the public and managed by the federal government. The executive branch has the legal authority to simply declare these regulations?
Yes, they do.
Without approval from Congress?
That's right.
Then they may actually happen.
That's true. And FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, is now going to require states to show that they are accounting for climate change impacts like rising sea levels in their disaster risk assessment plans if they want to qualify for federal grants on infrastructure.
So no grants if they don't have a plan?
Right.
We'll see if that holds up at the Supreme Court.
Finally, we're about to find out what happens when an eclipse hits the world's most solar-powered country. Germany says it's ready for a solar eclipse on March 20th that will cause a sudden drop and then sudden rise in solar power entering their grid. It will be a challenge, but they say it's also a stress test that will give them insight into how to manage the future power grid of 2030 when a majority of Germany's electricity will come from solar and wind.
What's the difference between a solar eclipse in Europe and a cloudy day?
Not very much, it turns out, but it's the fast ramp down and ramp up of solar energy entering the grid that they're going to manage for.
Yeah, I don't really get that. I've heard people panicking about this, saying, oh, they didn't figure this in advance. Seems kind of dumb.
Yeah, these are Germans. They're ready for it.
Okay. For much more, you're not calling the Germans dumb,
no,
right?
No, definitely not.
Okay, good, because that never ends well. For much more on all of the stories we've covered here today and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider donating to the Green News Report. We rely solely on listeners to stay on the public airwaves and continue connecting the climate change dots. Thank you in advance. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Brad and Desi are really good with the bumpers. There is none better at choosing a bumper than Kathy Malloy, and I was kind of proud of that one myself, you know, the Jay Giles band. But sometimes you've got a number of choices. Of course, we were talking about the fraternities and their pictures of passed out women. It was a choice for me between the Jay Giles band and this. Lovely melody, isn't it? Nice long intro.
It's not the way you look, it's not the way that you smile. Although there's something to that. It's not the way you have your hair, it's not that certain style. It could be that good mood. I wouldn't spend my life just wishing.
Yeah, you can understand. Of course, for all, well, never. Leave it alone. It is 24 minutes past the hour. A note coming in from Robert in Australia. Bob, we don't have fraternities at Australian universities. When you go to university in Australia, that's what you do. You go to university. Students either live at home and commute or live in nearby rental accommodation. Sadly, there have been some issues with less than honest people leasing substandard accommodation to students, but the government's usually onto such situations eventually. My first exposure to fraternities was the film Animal House. Since then, there have been a number of films with similar themes, and I've always wondered why the U.S. bothers with such unnecessary nonsense. Of course, you can ask the same thing about college football, college basketball, anything that isn't academia. And in many ways, they all stem from good ideas gone wrong. Just like fraternities do. So, there's that. Hey, welcome John Holmdert to the chat room. Just saw that John jumped in. John helped out the other night. Thank you very kindly, John. And you, too, can jump into the chat room as well. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. It's free, like everything else associated with the horn. It's all free and entirely made possible through listener support. The contribute tab is at headonradionetwork.com. Headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. Pick yourself out a screen name. Pick yourself out a password, and, well, heck, you'll be engaged in the real-time experience, multimedia even, before you even know what hit you. Let's run over to the phones. Hey, Bill.
Good evening.
How in the world are you?
I'm fine, I guess. I just, you know, tonight you got me going again. That woman in South Carolina, well, we know what South Carolina was in 1860.
Right.
They were the guys that we helped to push that button. And when Sherman's men got into South Carolina, they just really tore it up. What's the capital of South Carolina?
Columbia.
Columbia. That city burned. Now, they never went to Charleston. I think some of the guys would have really liked to make a right turn and take Charleston, but they knew it would fall because of, you know. Anyway, they raised hell down there, and when you hear
and not with and not without good reason. Let's add that not without good reason.
They were angry. How many of they watched how kind of all their friends had died along the way. I mean, they just weren't parachuted in there and started fighting. Some of these guys had crossed the river, the western. They crossed the Ohio, and kept moving south from there,
Right.
But
I mean, we're talking about the Western Army too. Can you imagine marching from Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa to Mississippi?
Yep.
I mean, walking. Well, okay, some of them came down the Mississippi on boats, but there's a hell of a lot of walking involved.
Oh, yeah. And the shoes they wore were, and believe it or not, I've read things that some guy didn't know their left foot from their right. The way they taught them was they put hay on one foot and straw on the other. And if the hay was on the left foot, they'd say hay foot, straw foot. As they were teaching him how to march, and march, and then taking those large groups of marching men and shaking them out into a line of battle was a real hell of a mess. But that's another story. But that's South Carolina. It seems to be the same. And the other thing this woman awoke in me was the fact that our mental health system in this country has taken a big bath. I remember in Ohio, the Republicans wanted to clear out the institutions because it was costing a lot of money. The Democrats felt that these people should be out because they've been in there so long. So there was probably logic on both sides, but they started emptying those places, and I saw some of these guys around University Circle, and they had been at, one guy would take the Social Security check and just buy every piece of junk he saw. And midway through the month, he was trying to sell it to anybody that would buy it, because he hadn't paid his rent, But the people would just let out and say, okay, go about your business, and they were not prepared for it. Because how bad this system is. It's like credit. People don't... I would teach people in the last 2 years of high school what credit can do to you much more than what it can do for you, The bad use of this stuff.
Right.
But that's another story. But that woman was, she sounded like she belonged in an institution. Or she sure should have been seeing a shrink. Because she was just, she was...
Wait, Bill. See, here's the thing. She is just a typical, ordinary, average, everyday South Carolinian. She only sounds like that because you're not out of your mind. You don't sit around your history from 155 years ago, but you don't sit around wishing it had gone the other way.
No, I couldn't do that because I don't think most of these northern guys were fighting for the freedom of the black man. The guys from the east of Massachusetts and such were...
That was part of the genius of Lincoln, though, was that he was able to bring together the abolitionists and the unionists and form a coalition that would hold together in order to save the nation. And at the same time do a noble and laudable thing, which was to eliminate the pernicious, vile, hateful, disgusting institution of human bondage that the, in, with yep. which the South was so desperately in love.
Yeah, well, cheap labor is still an important part of the system, you know. That was horrible. And the cheapest labor you can get. Feed them crap and work them to death, you know. God, I mean, you look back on this society and say, I mean, the people I am proud of were engaged in such an action. You know, slavery had been outlawed. The English had, it was illegal to bring people in, but people were still doing it. And the Middle Passage was not a pleasant experience, to say the least. So that's point number one about the show tonight. And then you got into this fraternity stuff. And I played a lot of those type of parties, Bob. Frat parties were... I give them the electrode, you know, as far as what they paid me, you know. Here, how do you like this? This is what I charge. And they'd pay it. Because these kids, most of these kids came from...
Well, it was that
money or the other, you know.
Right, daddy's money.
Mm-hmm. I want to play one party, and I'll leave you after this, because I'm sure there's people who want to talk to you. I asked a guy one night, well, what the... Because they have themes for these parties, you know.
Oh, believe me, I know.
Yeah, well, you know. And I said, what's this party about? He says, this is get 'em drunk and plank 'em. That was exactly what the man told me. I just said, oh, God. I'm glad I don't have any daughters coming here.
Yeah.
Because that's what it amounted to, you know.
Well, it's...
And believe me, Bob, I wasn't the Mr. Celibate all those years myself, but to me, it was a woman's decision as to what we did, not mine. And I didn't have to... You know, women were... hitting the sexual revolution, and I never had to, you know, push too hard to get anybody. I didn't, that's a bad choice of words. I didn't have to force anybody into anything. You know, I didn't want to. Something like that is not really a shared experience, you know. And the name of the game to me was a shared experience with another human being. That's what made it... made it happen, you know. And I didn't want them drunk or stoned or wake up in the morning and say, who the hell are you, you know?
Yeah.
The woman would say, I went to bed with a field marshal and woke up with a circus clown. That's what they'd say to me in the next morning, you know. But anyway, how did she go? And yeah, you're on it tonight. I can't believe that woman. They let her get up and sent her. Santorum gives my former religion a bad name. He's one of the guys that wants to go back to the pre-changes in the Catholic Church. He wants to go back to the constant Latin Mass and the you play dominoes bull, you know?
Yeah, basically pre-Vatican II Roman Catholicism.
Yeah, he's a reactionary, to say the least. Anyway, have a good night. Hang in there.
Well, I will sure try. You do the very same, Bill. Have a good evening.
Bye now.
Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, the legendary bluesman, calling from Cleveland. And, well, I imagine in the day when, back in the day when Bill was, Bill and his bands were playing events, I don't think he probably needed to get anybody liquored up. I mean, you see, I mean, you've heard his music. Most of us have. You can find it on YouTube. The guy who fronts the band often has no trouble in that department, shall we say. But it's also a commentary on the attitudes that prevail among these privileged, mostly white young men. It's, you know, why put the time and effort into a relationship when you can just, what Bill say, get them liquored up and plank them? God, it's animalistic. But it's also, sadly, de rigueur. I blame the parents. Let's keep it rolling and run back over to the Gizmo line. The Skype line, 304-574-8178, is still open if you want to jump in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Bob.
What's happening, Kevin?
Not much. I was listening to that tarantula person from Fox, and I was thinking to myself, I wonder what this woman would do if someone posted a new picture of her online.
Well, she would be shocked. She'd be outraged.
Exactly. But if it happened to her, she wouldn't blame herself in any way, shape, or form. She wouldn't be guilty of doing anything wrong. And I dare say that at least a portion of those women who were photographed unconscious and naked probably didn't do anything wrong either, as in they weren't drunk, they were drugged.
I think there's probably little doubt that that some percentage of them absolutely were.
Yeah. And so, Miss Tarantula, you know, that's the whole mindset of that part of our population that follows that broadcasting network. I'm right, you're wrong, anything that happens to you is your fault. If it happens to me, it's not my fault. And it's just, when I hear people like her, it just drives me crazy, because there's no thought of basic, well, I think you described it as something like basic human compassion, you know, feeling sorry for the victims, or feeling a compassion for the victims that this thing happened to them. And we define, the word I'm looking for is not psychotic, sociopath, as people being without feeling. Ted Bundy was a sociopath. People like him who do crimes like that. And you gotta say that this, people like Tinteros kind of are in the same class in a different way. Because when they're up there on that stage talking that crap they talk, and you're listening to it, that's what I was thinking to myself, is they're nothing but sociopaths. Because they had no feeling or empathy or compassion for those women. And, you know, what's the difference between them and Ted Bundy when it comes right down to it? The only difference being is Bundy killed some people and they didn't. But they kind of are, because they're kind of killing people in a different way by saying that they're responsible for their own, for the crimes that have been committed against them. You know, and what else can you say?
I know. It's, well, sometimes the only response is, forget it, Jake, it's Chinatown.
Yeah.
But underlying, I mean, I don't focus on these clips for the shock value of them. Okay, sometimes they're funny, the business about nuking Charleston, South Carolina, for instance. But the real value is the degree to which it can engender a conversation, Kevin, about how these things come into being, and sometimes, you know, sometimes it's lighthearted. Sometimes it's mean-spirited, the story in question. And sometimes it's just downright horrifying. I've got another story in the stack here. The NAACP in Mississippi is calling for an investigation. And Shorty in L.A. alerted me to this earlier today. The NAACP in Mississippi is calling for an investigation over what appears to be, you know, here halfway through the second decade of the 21st century, a lynching, another godforsaken lynching in Mississippi, in Claiborne County, Mississippi. A man had been missing for a couple of days, and lo and behold, he was last seen March the 2nd, and he was hanging from a tree by a rope. A missing persons report was filed on March the 8th. He was 54 years old, Otis James Byrd. He had been dropped off at a casino in Vicksburg by a friend, and after that, he disappeared until he was found a half a mile from his last known residence. Wow.
I seem to recall a story like that from a couple of years ago.
And that's the whole point. There's a conversation to be had, because something like that, it would appear at first blush that there is a linkage, philosophical and spiritual at least, if not direct and physical. But consider the story from last night about the stickers that showed up on a bunch of minority-owned businesses in Austin, Texas, announcing that the number of colored, that it was a whites-only business. and to those who would say that, well, you know, that's just an isolated incident. Well, how many isolated incidents do there have to be before we acknowledge that this country? And this is the worst part of it, a renewed problem. It was on the decline. It really, really was. But as of 2008, or perhaps 2007, it has ramped through the roof. And there's no getting around it. Let's say, last night it was the stickers in Austin. The night before that, it was a conversation with the angry Indian, in which we talked about targets for sale at a gun store in South Dakota that feature the silhouette profile, and they're just called running nigger targets.
Yep.
Now again, I ask you, how many more of these isolated incidents have to happen before we suddenly realize that they're not nearly as damned isolated as we might wish that they were?
Wasn't too long ago that we were talking about the targets down in Florida, the police department was using targets like that, if you recall that story.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, yeah, it has ramped up since 2007, 2008, and we all know why. That doesn't mean that batshit crazy wasn't there before 2008. It just means that the election of a black man as president brought it out. And if Miss Clinton becomes the first woman president, what is that going to bring out?
Oh, we will see. We'll see misogyny taken to new levels.
Yeah. And so then when the first Italian, you get where I'm going with this, when the first Italian becomes elected president and the Jewish man becomes, you see where I'm going.
Oh, dear God, a Jewish president?
Yeah.
The Klan and the Nazis and the skinheads would have a rise that would wit.
Poor Alexander would have a coronary right on the spot.
Well, that would be worth the price of admission now, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
I saw the Charleston newsletter. That conversation was because of this woman talking to Senator Frothy Mix or whatever you want to call him. I saw the one tweet about it, and I'm thinking to myself, where do these people come up with this stuff from? I mean, you know, you really gotta really work to come up with something like that, because Washington, D.C. is not too awful far away from Charleston, South Carolina, so the president knew the nuke self. You know, I mean, it makes no sense whatsoever. But in these people's minds, it does, and that's what's so scary. They don't think on a human level, and they don't think with any amount of common sense at all. And yet, it's readily a plurality of the people, of these people, are to some extent or other in our government running things. And what does that say for our future as a country? And, you know, it makes me kind of glad to be 55. And glad that I won't be here to see what happens in another 50 years unless something changes dramatically. Because, you know, progress is going to continue. That's what these people do not understand, is no matter how much that plurality of people wants to hold us back, the human race, by and large, has continued to progress and will continue to do so.
I see. You and I, had we the rest of the evening, Kevin, you and I might go around and round on what on how to define progress.
Well, true.
You know, the what we call progress in the right, well, let's start with the Industrial Revolution, really.
Yeah.
What is referred to as progress along those lines ain't necessarily so.
No.
Because what looks like progress on a switch, oh, look, we can flip a switch and the room gets bright and it cools off or it gets warmer. My, aren't we clever little primates? Well, how clever are we when it turns out that what we've done since the Industrial Revolution is to make it a lot less likely for human beings to be able to continue to inhabit the planet while at the same time wildly overpopulating it?
Yep.
The greatest successes, and this is not to say that I would be any good at any of this, because I wouldn't. I'd be dead, okay? I'd just acknowledge it. I, like most of the population of this country, I'm a creature of my environment. That tends to be true of most humans. But the majority of the greatest amount of progress that this species has had was had prior to 7,000 years ago.
Yep.
And that's a blink. And, well, You could add in and say, okay, let's include agricultural sedentary society. All right, let's do that, and let's then say that the greatest amount of success that we have had as a species has been up until the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
4 of 9 in the chat room just referenced the fact that offshore drilling off the Atlantic coast of the U.S. is a real worry. Well, you know what? It absolutely is. And all drilling for natural gas, for oil, all mining for coal is worrisome relative to the future success of the species. because all of those things are, in the end, suicidal. Well, no, not word. That's not the right word. Speciesidal acts.
Yep.
We can't continue to do it and survive. And now that we know that one of the ways to tell that we are on the downslope is the extreme methods that have to be used to get at this stuff.
Yep.
Whether it's blowing up mountains or hydraulic fracturing. You know, I read an article earlier today. I don't have it immediately to hand. But we are beginning to learn a little bit of what goes into the fracking soup. And it's not a pretty picture. And we have California to thank for it, even though Governor Brown seems intent on fracking out of California. It's a toxic soup of hydrocarbons and fluids and radioactive materials and toxins that are generally inimical to continued life on this planet. And the ultimate irony of it is, you know, you may have heard that clip from President Obama during the Green News Report where he was talking about some politicians are just paid shills for the oil industry.
Yep.
Well, in the wider for-profit media sphere, that was, oh my God, did you hear what he said? Yep. No, it doesn't matter until you call people out, until you say Jim Inhofe, Joe Manchin, are paid shills for the hydrocarbon industry. It doesn't matter. You can say some, and it doesn't mean anything. But anyway, to continue, the fact of the matter, the irony, the cruel irony, is that the industrial process and the process of scientific discovery has finally brought us to a place where we could guarantee the success of the species to the extent that it can ever be guaranteed, and leverage renewable energy that would energize the whole planet. It's not like alchemy. It's not like looking for the universal solvent or the philosopher's stone. The technology exists and it can be built upon and expanded, and the only thing standing in the way of it is the godforsaken hydrocarbon industry, whether it be coal, oil, or gas.
Exactly. And that, I think, is where you and I are not in disagreement about the word progress. Inventing the light bulb was not a bad thing. Unchecked, I'm using the word progress for lack of another word that comes to mind, but that unchecked greed toward, now we've invented the light bulb, now we need to get the whole world electrified and make money, so we have to blow up mountains.
Well, what does it say about electricity that one of the early publicity stunt experiments done was, Edison was all about direct current, DC. And I'm about to get myself in trouble, and I'll fall back on the expertise of our chat room moderator, Sparky Mancave, because, you know, people like him and Jay Cruzen have a hell of a lot more experience and understanding of electricity than I. But Edison was all about DC. Along comes Nikola Tesla, who says, I don't know, this alternating current thing may be big. And so in order to try to protect his wealth, his profit, and his market, Edison used alternating current to electrocute an elephant.
Yep.
To scare people into thinking that DC was the way to go.
Sure.
And so that tells you a little, and you have to, we kind of have to forgive, if forgive is even the right word, we kind of have to forgive humanity's technological shortcomings and its lack of understanding. You can't impose modern standards on people who did not have those standards available to them. Does that make sense? So,
yeah.
So when Edison invents the light bulb and thinks that we can electrify the world and blah, 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 well, they didn't fully understand concepts of finiteness. Maybe they should have, but they didn't.
Right.
And that goes back to capitalism. When Adam Smith is propagating the idea of capitalism, he's propagating it in a universe in which all goods will always be available for consumption, and the only question is whether they are abundant or scarce, and you wind up with market economics.
Right.
But the idea that scarcity could run down to zero, that wasn't really in Adam Smith's calculus. And in point of fact, had the idea of peer review been available back when Adam Smith was promulgating The Wealth of Nations, he would have been laughed out of the room.
Yep.
Because the theories that are put forth by Adam Smith are utterly and completely, undeniably unrealistic. They just are.
But those same views are espoused by capitalists today. Here in the most supposedly educated country in the world, by people who have gone to Harvard, Yale, and every other college in America. And those same people still believe that things like oil are infinite, not finite. They still deny that water in California is a year away from being finite.
And see, I think we probably need, Kevin, to have a broader conversation with the California members of the Horn Family Commune Congregation, people like Sandra and Tracy and Sparky and Tim and David in the Bay Area, and just what does this mean right down on the ground for everyday Californians? I mean, because I think if I was to hear that living where I live, I'd think we got a problem.
Yeah. I would be terrified if today the mayor of my city, we've got a year's worth of water left, because not necessarily the city proper, but essentially the city has a million plus people in it. And a year's worth of water means that I've got X amount of gallons of water left to drink in that next year, and then what?
Well, I heard Brad and Desi, I think, on the Tuesday edition of the Green News Report saying that one scientist has said what you need to do right now is start rationing.
Yep.
And both Brad and Desi sort of, yeah, that's going to happen. And just to point out one example, there is a Roman Catholic church in San Francisco that has installed a sprinkler system that comes on every 45 to 60 minutes, and it doesn't water their grass, Kevin. Doesn't water anything. The sprinkler system comes on and sprays the area immediately in the little nook, the little alcove by the church door, because that's where homeless people go to take shelter.
Yep.
The Roman Catholic Church. And it's not just any Roman Catholic Church. It's the Roman Catholic Church that is home to the Archbishop of San Francisco. And the sprinkler system comes on to soak homeless people who would have the unmitigated temerity to sleep in the doorway of a building dedicated to the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi who said that not shitting on people would be a pretty nice way to start making things better. And Sparky's pointing out that that report refers to stored water and not groundwater, reservoirs and the like. so we don't even know what the ground. I have no idea what the groundwater situation is.
Well, can the groundwater situation be good when they're fracking?
Well, and see, that's the next question, isn't it, Kevin?
Yes.
If you've got a year left of stored water, might it be a nice idea not to poison the groundwater that you might need? And I'm sure that groundwater is a different story in, say, Sparky's neck of the woods than it is in our buddy Greg in San Diego's neck of the woods.
Right.
Or neck of the desert, as it were.
But you'll always have a Jim Imhoff there to deny the science.
Because the check clears, right.
Right. And as long as the check clears, he's going to be right there saying, there's no truth to that. No, can't happen. Even though 97% of scientists say it can, we'll follow those 3% of scientists who have been paid off by the industry to deny it, and we'll go on our merry way until the day the tap runs dry. And then you know who's not going to be in town, who's not going to be anywhere near the town? Jim Imhoff.
Sure.
He's going to be somewhere very far away.
Well, hopefully at some point he'll be somewhere really, really hot. If we actually believed in a hell, he would be bound to be headed there, but oh well.
Yeah, well. Yeah, it's... What more can I say, Bob? This is where I wrestle with myself, if not on a daily basis, at least once a week, on giving up, not giving up, what to do, how to do, keep fighting, you know the drill. And I still come back to you got to keep fighting, you got to keep getting the message out there because we got to make a difference. There's always, for every Jim Imhoff in the world, there's got to be one of us to counter the BS he spews out. And as long as there is one of us to counter the BS he spews out, there will be someone to say no and offer not a believed in hope, but real hope, if you understand where I'm differentiating.
No, I do.
So, and yeah, sometimes I don't sound very hopeful, but that's what I was saying about the world making progress because, you know, like I said, a lot of our progress was some 4,000, whatever number of years ago. The civilization back then didn't have near what we have today in terms of some of the quote-unquote finer things of life, but they were much more enlightened. And, you know.
Right. Yeah, I get it. Well, Kevin, it's awfully good to talk to you this evening. I hope things are all well out that way.
They are. They're doing well. So.
Good. All right, well, we will talk soon then.
We'll talk to you later, Bob.
All right. Bye now. Our buddy Kevin, calling from Colorado, and both lines are open, 304-574-8178 being the one, the gizmo line being 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. Note coming from Robert in Australia, it is generally recognized Thomas Edison perfected the electric light bulb, but that Humphrey Davy invented it. Aha! Thomas Edison perfected it. Thomas Edison figured out how to make a really big buck off of it. Yeah. thanks going out to Dan in the Old Dominion. Dan being the first one to jump in this evening and help with keeping the program on the air. Thank you very kindly, Dan. We have now only $180 to go for the evening's upkeep goal, being $150 plus the $50 we fell short last night. PayPal button is at Head On Radio Network, well, the interface, headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. And you can also participate by mail, U.S. Postal Service address being The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, WV25801. All checks and money orders made payable, please, to The Horn. So Boss Man Wayne has an easier time dealing with it. We do. Okay, so here is an example of that shilling for the oil industry we were talking about, or let us just say hydrocarbon industry. You know that one of my senators is Joe Manchin. You know that Joe Manchin has ignored the science leading to the inevitable conclusion that the coal industry is poisoning his own constituents, and he's been ignoring it for years. President Obama's administration, and in particular President Obama's Environmental Protection Agency, is considering new standards, new regulations relating to the amount of toxic, poisonous particulate matter, death-dealing particulate matter, ozone in this particular instance, across the United States. We're talking about the EPA's ability to regulate the National Ambient Air Quality Standards, NAAQS, NAAQS. Recognizing that increased ozone levels result in significant health impacts, the EPA is set to issue new regulations. Enter Joe Manchin of West by God, Virginia, and the check is obviously cleared, and John Thune of South Dakota. They have just, in the last few days, introduced in the Senate of the United States the Mr. Orwell, are you around? Are you? Because Joe Manchin and John Thune have introduced the Clean Air Strong Economies Act. Remember the Clear Skies Initiative that called for more pollution under the Bush administration? Remember the Bush administration's Healthy Forests Initiative that called for clear-cutting forests to make them healthy? This is that kind of Orwellian language, the Clean Air Strong Economies Act, which, of course, proposes that the air be anything but clean. That legislation would prevent the EPA from lowering the ozone standard nationwide and instead focus on what Joe Manchin and John Thune and the rest of the, what did President Obama call them, shills for the oil industry, well, and let's just call them the hydrocarbon industry, the EPA would have to focus on the worst areas for air quality before they lowered the national ambient air quality standards. And of course, by worst air quality, we certainly don't mean West Virginia now, do we? Well, we got some horrible air quality here, but you wouldn't know it because, guess what? There is not a single EPA air monitor in the entire state of West Virginia. Why? Well, then you might start picking up some of those particulates that come off the mountaintop removal sites, or some of those particulates that billow out above frack pads. Mm-hmm, see? Or maybe particulates and foul, vile filth that come from our ancient, antiquated coal-fired power plants. We all know that Joe, the word balance is almost a member of the Manchin family. I've always said we need to strike a balance between the environment and the economy, which is what this bill does, placing new costly regulations on states when they have not had sufficient time to comply with the existing standards is unfair. Lowering the ozone standard would cost states billions of dollars and thousands of good-paying jobs. Thousands, thousands, maybe billions, who knows? We need the EPA and our federal government to work with us as allies, not as adversaries who continually implement onerous regulations and move the goalposts before we even have a chance to comply. And yet, time after time after time, we see that the only way you can get states like West Virginia to comply is by imposing rules and regulations upon them. If West Virginia had had its way, we'd still be pumping the same kind of toxic coal smoke right into the air that I breathe every night when it gets into my house from my neighbor down the hill and up the wind. Yeah. Joe Manchin's own constituents are poisoned, and several thousand of them die every year from poisons that come off of coal extraction sites. Thousands of people die every year from pollution, air pollution, that induces things like asthmatic attacks that are irremediable. Joe's still pissing and moaning. He says, it would have a tremendous impact on rural areas which depend on coal as an affordable and reliable source of energy production. How affordable is an energy source that winds up killing you? How affordable is an energy source that winds up poisoning your children? Check cleared. John Thune said, the Obama EPA needs to focus its efforts on areas already struggling with attainment, not strangle American industry with a job-killing regulation. Boy, job-killing regulation. You almost kind of automatically know that this was written for him over at Alec. Or maybe by Chuck or Dave Koch themselves, don't you? Job-killing regulation. But wait. Over in the chat room, for instance, our buddy Gerald is a member of the building trades. I think Gerald even worked at one point in time doing the retrofit, trying to bring the John Amos power plant into compliance. I think there was a job associated. I think there were no small number of jobs associated with that retrofit, and with retrofits of coal-fired power plants all across the country. So how are they job-killing regulations when coming into compliance with the regulations involves people in, say, the construction industry being hired to do the compliance work? Hey, wow, cool. Our buddy Greg from the Malloy chat room is in the chat room this evening. Good evening to Reborn, new visitor to the chat room. Got a good crowd in there. Good evening, Carol Baker, Carol Abel, Devin, 4 of 9, Gerald, Greg, John Home Dirt, Jug of Punch, Kelly, Reborn, Sentient Steve, and Stockton Larry and Texas T. My goodness, lovely little gang in there. By the way, I had a note from Pete in Vermont a little earlier when I mentioned the story about Edison electrocuting the elephant. I'm pretty sure I've got that right. Pete in Vermont said, I'm so sickened by what man has done to elephants. I wish I hadn't heard that story about Edison, but I know you're a truth teller, and I do appreciate your show. Thank you, Pete. Best to you and yours as well. Now, I mentioned that Joe Manchin won't acknowledge the science that says his own constituents are being poisoned by something that he profits by personally. Joe's a coal guy. Did you know that? Yeah. Oh, by the way, the hissy that he and John Thune and I suppose some other bought-off shill senators are having about the ozone standards, here's what the EPA wants to do. They want to lower the NAAQS, the National Ambient Air Quality Standards. The present standard is 75 parts per billion. They want to lower it. Now, and to hear Thune and Manchin, you'd think that they're going to lower it to zero and ain't nobody going to have a job no more. There's only one problem. The EPA wants to lower the standard to 65 to 70 parts per billion. Billion with a B. They want to lower that standard by between 7 and 12 miserable little itsy-bitsy teeny-weeny parts per billion. Meanwhile, John Thune says, oh, that would slash our gross domestic product by $1.7 trillion through 2040 and a million, 1.4 million jobs per year. Wonder where they got those numbers. Because I'm pretty sure that John Thune is neither mathematician nor economist. Why, look, it's the National Manufacturing Association. Huh. I wonder if they're a member of ALEC. I'll bet they are. So, it turns out, according to the State Journal here in West Virginia, which is a pro-business publication of the first order, 227 counties in 27 states in the U.S. are considered in non-attainment with the 75 parts per billion standard. So here is Joe Manchin's super genius answer to that quandary. So the overbearing, jackbooted federal government hasn't even bothered to compel 227 counties in the United States to get in compliance with the EPA's legally enacted air quality standard. Okay? At 75 parts per billion. That means that there are 227 counties that are at least at 76 parts per billion. Well, here's how Joe Manchin remedies it with his CASE Act. Clean air, strong economies. No. Joe Manchin CASE Act says that before the EPA could ever act to lower the NAAQS, a miserable five to 12 parts per billion, before the EPA could do that, 85% of those 227 counties would have to come into compliance. Meanwhile, the EPA seems to have had a bit of trouble getting those 227 counties into compliance. When was the last time you heard of a county official being frog marched off to Club Fed for failing to come into compliance? How about never? None? Zero? Zilch? Zip? Nada? There's a reason this story's on Thorn in the Side Thursday. Oh! So until the states and until the counties that refuse to comply with the standard comply with the standard, even though the EPA can't force them to comply with the standard, until they comply with the standard, we're not going to lower the standard because they won't comply. I'm trying to figure out a suitable analogy for this. Like, for instance, until 85% of arsonists stop burning down buildings, even though no one has the power to stop the arsonists from burning down the buildings, we're not going to make more arsonists stop burning buildings. Granted, that's an analogy on the fly, but it might work. If you have a better analogy, you're welcome to offer it up. 304-663-4676 is the Gizmo line. 304-574-8178, the other line. We call it the Skype line, whatever. Or you can do it by email or Facebook or the Twitters. EPA tries to regulate coal ash. Joe Manchin says, but coal ash is nice. EPA tries to regulate the toxins that poison and kill people in the air. Joe Manchin's opposed to that, too. You'd almost think that you could refer to Joe Manchin as the pro-poison senator. Dick. One of those bought and paid for shills of the industry, right? President Obama? Not that you'd ever say that out loud. Lucky you, you've got people like me to do that for you. So, oh well, let's move along to some. I said last night, remind me to mention this, and well, I just reminded me to mention this. Speaking of Joe Manchin and failed state governments like West Virginia's, you know that this past Monday we held the People's Foot Rally. Hopefully it's up on the Horn archive. I'm not sure if it is, but if it isn't, I'll try to get Ben to put it up there. Well, we had the People's Foot Rally on Monday. And it featured a number of speakers. I kind of emceed it and said a few things. Bo Webb spoke at the very end. And in the middle, a number of people came forward to talk about why it is absolutely necessary that mountaintop removal be ended in Appalachia, in West Virginia, and why it be ended immediately, and why the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection needs to immediately stop issuing mountaintop removal permits. Grassroots people power can, and when genuinely done, is effective. The People's Foot Rally was Monday. There were about 150 of us there. Jug Punch and Mo came down. Hi, Jug. Hi, Mo. There were about 150 of us there. And a number of them walked very calmly and peacefully into the DEP for a meeting that the DEP refused to have with the people who were affected by mountaintop removal. By God, if that had been 30 or 40 coal miners, they'd have been knocking down walls to accommodate them. But that was Monday. On Tuesday, the administration of GERT, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, suddenly said, and this is big, this is huge, not GERT himself, but his administration said that they were finally going to begin evaluating the more than 20 different peer-reviewed science journal articles that point to a health crisis precipitated by the practice of mountaintop removal in West Virginia. This was done through in the person of the commissioner of the Bureau for Public Health, a man named Dr. Rahul Gupta. You may recall Dr. Gupta was one of the few people who provided a competent voice for why last year's Freedom disaster was so consequential and of so much concern. this was a watershed moment on Tuesday. Because, as I've noted before, never, ever had state government in West Virginia acknowledged that there was even a problem. Mountaintop removal was never a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day kind of stuff. It was an article of faith, a matter of orthodoxy, that one did not mention the fact that people were getting sick and dying in mountaintop removal communities. It's not that they wouldn't acknowledge that the studies were correct, it's that they would not acknowledge that these reports existed at all. And so, after this grassroots movement, after this grassroots rally, to have Dr. Rahul Gupta say, this analysis, this is a quote, the analysis is something that is needed going forward. The bottom line here is to let science speak for itself. It's time that we attempt to do that. If I had any issue at all with Dr. Gupta, I would say that it is long past time that we do that. But that's a very big deal. And Dr. Gupta says that they're going to engage surrounding states like Kentucky and Virginia to look at the academic nonprofit research being done, peer-reviewed research, and that the Bureau for Public Health, as well as the West Virginia DEP, would ask the EPA, the Centers for Disease Control, the National Institutes of Health, and the Federal Office of Surface Mining to, quote, seek relevant subject matter expertise, allowing for the exploration of a federal-state multi-agency partnership to conduct analysis of the existing research in the field. We're planning on to move on this relatively quickly. We need to find out, is there a contribution, and what is that contribution, and to what human diseases, and that's when policy decisions have to be made. This came about as a part and as a result of determined action by ordinary citizens. And I mention this story because you have a hand in it. You, we, us, the members of the Horn Family Commune Congregation, are more knowledgeable, generally speaking, about the hazards and horrors attendant with mountaintop removal than with any audience of any other program or any other gathering, any other community, of any other media outlet on earth. Period. That's undeniable. It's unquestionable. And with the introduction back in 2012, for the first time, of the AIC Act, members of the Horn community from all over the United States, and in fact all over the world, especially American expats, have taken action to ask their representatives to co-sponsor the AIC Act. Beginning in 2011, people like Bo Webb and I, and we were kind of in the wilderness on this for a while, said that we were not going to talk about the aesthetic problems with mountaintop removal anymore. Mountaintop removal is ugly as hell, and it creates unfixable scars, unfixable damage to the landscape of Central Appalachia. But we said we weren't going to talk about that anymore. Mountaintop removal kills all manner of birds and bugs and beetles and butterflies and deer and frogs and fish, turkeys, But we said we weren't going to talk about that anymore. Mountaintop removal creates hellscapes that are visible from space. But we said we weren't going to talk about that anymore. Mountaintop removal destroys countless, well, no, not countless, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, thousands of acres of prime, sustainable, renewable forest land. Carbon sinks to help absorb the CO2 that's generated by our hydrocarbon-fueled economy. It wipes out the ramps and the morels and the slippery elm bark, which is attached to the slippery elms. It wipes out valuable, very valuable resources like ginseng. But we decided we weren't going to talk about that anymore. Because it became apparent to us that what many families in Central Appalachia had learned the hard way, had learned from volumes written in tears in hospitals and funeral homes all over this region, that mountaintop removal was in fact killing our loved ones, poisoning our loved ones, sickening our loved ones. That was what we were going to talk about. And that was why we were going to talk about the end of mountaintop removal as an existential necessity. And this we did. If you've been listening to this program since fall of 2011, you know that we changed the terms of the discussion. We changed the terms of the discussion to one of almost exclusively matters of human health, human well-being, public health. And in doing that, we have changed the entire. I'm not trying to aggrandize myself, but we did. We changed the nature of the entire national dialogue on matters of environmental justice. We changed it. We transformed it into a dialogue about human rights. And so now, when you hear the Keystone XL pipeline being talked about, it's not talked about in terms of whether or not a pipeline going running all the way north to south down the United States is an ugly thing. And their jobs argument has been rendered absolutely moot because the Keystone XL pipeline is now talked about as a human rights issue and a question of access to clean, potable water for which continuation of the human species, well, it's an absolute necessity. It's a sine qua non. Same thing with fracking. We talk about fracking now in terms of human health. Governor Cuomo issued a fracking ban in New York State based upon the impacts fracking has on human health. We talk about drilling issues in terms of their impact on human health. We talk about coal ash in terms of their impact on human health. We talk about bomb trains in terms of their impact on human health. And that discussion, that argument, began and got traction because grassroots hillbillies insisted upon finally beginning to talk about what was being done to them in terms of what was being done to them. And you have engaged frequently all over this country, not just with Democrats, but with Republicans. You have engaged in that discussion as well. So when one of those watershed moments comes along, like came along this past Tuesday, when a state government that had buried its head in the coal pile and refused to acknowledge science finally acknowledged science, you have a right to be proud. You have a right to say, I had a hand in that. You have a right to say, when justice finally comes to Central Appalachia, it will come because I helped insist that it come. When justice finally comes to communities that are poisoned by fracking, and they're being poisoned even as we speak, you will be able to say, that justice came because I took action. And the same with the Keystone XL pipeline. The same with bomb trains. It may not have even felt like much when you were doing it, but I assure you, it was. It was a big deal. And I'm looking here at the news article that proves it. Now, bear in mind, this article also contains a quote from a guy, a nasty old creep by the name of Bill Rainey, the president of the West Virginia Coal Association. And he said, I don't know why we need to review these studies. We don't even think they're accurate. Because they're paid not to think the studies are accurate. Because the studies aren't accurate to them as long as the checks keep clearing. So I just wanted to make sure that we shared that little piece of good news. Because it is, in fact, good news. And I will remind you that the AIC Act has been introduced, and none of this would happen if the AIC Act had not been introduced in Congress. Because suddenly the AIC Act is beginning to scare certain people. Because they recognize that it does represent federal action that could end mountaintop removal once and for all. And so the AIC Act has been reintroduced. It is H.R. 912 in the House of Representatives. And it needs your help. Once an activist, always an activist. It's time to reach out all over again. You know, when a bill has to be reintroduced, it gets reintroduced at, you know, from jump. And we need a lot of people on the bill. I don't care where you are. It is worth a letter, an email, a phone call. Several phone calls if necessary. To your elected representative in the House saying, sign on to this bill. It's also worth a phone call to both of your United States senators saying, introduce this bill in the Senate. The time for waiting is long past. It is intolerable for real, live, honest to goodness American citizens to be poisoned to death just so some coal company can ship trainloads, boatloads of coal to Germany, to the Netherlands, to China, to India, to Russia. It is intolerable. So thank you one and all, and hopefully you'll get active and stay active. What else? What else this evening? Now that we've had our little moment of good news, let's go back into the swamp, shall we? Yeah. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday. What fun would it be? Well, it's probably the wrong phrase, but if you want a thorn, look no further than the 1st Congressional District of Texas and those misbegotten jackasses who repeatedly, for reasons known but to various imaginary deities, continue to send Representing Louis Asparagus Gohmert to the Congress of the United States. Representing Asparagus went on the Washington Watch radio program hosted by Tony Narman? Yes, Mother Bates Perkins from the Family Research Council to talk about the danger that Merca is in from them heathen Persians. Get the hockey puck back out if you happen to put it away. You'll be needing it.
You know what? We need to encourage this administration to go take out Iran's nuclear capability. I mean, obviously, for Iran to continue spinning centrifuges for over a year and not even slow down those centrifuges for the purpose of discussion, and then when you find out that actually going from 5% to 90% enrichment only takes a small room and maybe a dump truck load full of the proper 5% enriched uranium.
Is there any asparagus involved? Just asking.
And voila, you can start having bombs.
That's how nuclear weapons come about? It's that simple? Really? I never knew that voila was involved in the Manhattan Project. I mean, just listen to the recipe again.
Maybe a dump truck load full of the proper 5% enriched uranium. And voila, you can start having bombs. This is serious stuff, and I don't think that we ought to put Israel in the position of having to save both themselves and the United States.
I didn't know that was the issue. That Iran was going to nuke the United States. That's going to take a few nukes, isn't it? I mean, a lot more than any pissant, two or three. And they're going to have a delivery system. And the minute they launch the first one, the entire country is going to turn into glass. Oh, okay. Thank you, Gerald. No, Bob. When a man missile loves a woman missile very, very much, that's how we get nuclear weapons. Oh, God. Up. Don't tell Louis. He probably thinks it's true. And then he'll worry about man missile on man missile. Oh, God.
I think it's time to bomb Iran, anything.
Okay, let's get this with no interruptions, because this is actually kind of important. We need to hear this idiot say this, because sadly, idiots often get listened to in the corridors of power. Okay?
It resembles a nuclear facility that was with centrifuges and the United States. I think it's time to bomb Iran, anything that resembles a nuclear facility that was with centrifuges. It's time to bomb. And we need to make clear to Iran, you can play these silly games with our president that buys into them and our Secretary of State, but the American people aren't buying it, and you're going to pay a price.
You heard it. You remember Titanic Tuesday when we were talking about, what was his name, Joshua Moravchik, who was using the pages of the Washington Post to say, well, of course, yes, we absolutely should bomb Iran, and we should bomb them a lot, and every so often, and every time the Grand Ayatollah scratches his head, we should be waiting for him with a bomb. Gotta bomb him. Gotta bomb him a lot. I mean, we can best them in bombing, can't we? Iran is not Afghanistan, and we didn't exactly have an easy time of it in Afghanistan. It is time to bomb Iran. And then, key language there, anything that resembles a centrifuge. That's scary language coming from a guy who's obsessed with asparagus. Devin noting, they'll drop the bombs through the doorways in the sand. Smart bombs, Devin. Smart bombs. Oh, and that's true. That's true, Gerald. You better worry about where manned missile goes to potty. I'm sure Louis Asparagus Gohmert is more than a little bit worried about where... Like that scene in the swimming pool from Caddyshack where the one kid looks at the baby Ruth bar floating in the pool. Duty! Yeah.
We have got to get that message across, or there'll never be a diplomatic solution unless they know we're serious about coming and taking out what they're trying to do.
Wait. So you can only have a diplomatic solution after you've given up on diplomatic solutions. Boop! At that point, I don't think it's a diplomatic solution anymore, is it? They want to bomb everything, don't they? That is the first Roger Zelazny reference, Devin. It was not lost on me because, well, Doorways in the Sand is one of my favorite science fiction novels. Do you hear me, Fred? Would you care for a peanut butter sandwich? Very nutritious. We love our science fiction, especially the classic stuff around here. All right, so we've heard from Representative Asparagus. I wonder if Tony Norman, yes, Mother Bates, Perkins has anything to say.
Yeah, I have to think that they were probably the only ones more disappointed last night than President Obama.
Oh, wait, okay, so now we're talking about the whole re-election of Bibi Netanyahu thing. That was another thing that they had a hissy about on Fox earlier today. It's 48 hours later, and that one in our White House still hasn't called to congratulate his master. I mean, Bibi Netanyahu. Why won't that communist dictator call Bibi Netanyahu and congratulate him for winning his election? Why? Why? It's an outrage. Israel is the best friend that Merca has. Even if they did kill a bunch of our people and have been known to abuse American citizens and shot one in the head not too awfully long back. Best friend we ever had. The only democracy in the Middle East. Yeah.
Roughly right. But, they were hoping that they would get a weak-kneed leader, but even Herzog, as I understand, the more liberal leader that was and still is vying for prime minister, I think he wants to defend Israel as well. But, Iran...
He only thinks Herzog wants to defend Israel, because he's liberal, right? course, being liberal in Israel kind of mean sort of means that maybe you might think about not killing quite as many Gazan babies in their cradles. Liberal.
Iran is a threat to them. They're a threat to us. I told Prime Minister Netanyahu 2 years ago, privately in his office, I am so sorry that we have put you in a position basically of defending not only Israel, but of defending the United States.
So Louis Asparagus Gomer apologized for that, but does that necessarily mean that's really the case? Note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. Sweet Jeebus, isn't Iran a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty? You know, unlike Israel. So the deal with these asshats is blow up the folks that have signed, don't blow up the people that are lying their asses off. Got it. That's about the size of it. We've only got a little bit of Louis Asparagus left to go. The least we can do is enjoy it. Or chew through the hockey puck. Your choice.
These guys are a threat to us as well. But
How? Damn it, at some point in time, one of these babbling goobers is going to have to explain how Iran is a threat to the United States. Well, okay, so if we start bombing Iran, they might retaliate by blocking the Straits of Hormuz, but that's retaliation. And if they're a threat to the United States, they're going to be a hell of a lot bigger threat if we start bombing them first. I mean, that makes sense, right? If they're a threat, they're going to become a bigger threat if we attack them? Because we all have to assume, because this is all an ethnically and racially based argument, the Iranians, if they had one nuclear weapon, they're crazy, so they'd immediately use it. Despite the fact that the world would turn them into glass if they did, because they're crazy. Well, aren't crazy countries? Don't they get more crazy if you attack them? I mean, really, can you bomb your way to peace? Because so far that concept has not worked. Generally speaking. You can't start a war and bomb your way to peace. I'm having a hard time here.
Maybe I'm hoping and praying that the president will realize, despite the agenda he has that's put Christians in jeopardy around the world, that he will not want to leave the Democratic Party so devastated that they won't recover for many decades, that maybe he'll start being more helpful to Israel instead of slapping them around.
Really? That's where we are now? So we started out the program with a story I didn't hear about? You know, how Barack Obama almost nuked Charleston, South Carolina. And we're going to finish with a story I somehow managed to miss, even though I'm a freaking news junkie, almost to the exclusion of my own well-being. To wit, that one in our White House has been slapping BB around and the whole poor little country of Israel. Slapping them around to the tune of giving them $3 billion a year that they don't even need. I sure wish that one in our White House would slap around America a little bit more and give and pump $3 billion into, say, universal single-payer health care. How about pumping $3 billion back into the SNAP program so that the per diem for people who don't have adequate food security could be a little bit more than maybe a dollar or two or three a day? God almighty, can you imagine a country where poor people might be allowed to have $5 a day for food? Maybe 10? I mean, we paid Halliburton $30 a damn burger for feeding the troops in Iraq because we gave up on the notion that the army should be in charge of feeding its own troops and the private sector could do it so much cheaper. Slapping around Israel. slapping them around with them wads, $100 bills. And Israel says, slap me again, Barack, and put a little stank on it this time. Jesus. So it's time to go. Now I need to go calm down. Oh boy, Friday on the front porch, tomorrow on the horn. Well, I'll be here. Hope y'all will too. We've had a lovely little time this evening. And we will hopefully have an extraordinary, ordinary roundtable going for tomorrow. Good? Good. We will begin the program, unless something dramatic happens between, say, now and 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time tomorrow. We will begin Friday on the front porch with a fundraising goal of $330. So maybe something dramatic will happen between now and then. Sure would be nice. And by dramatic, I don't mean somebody has to come up with $330, but a whole bunch of $5, this would help, or tens, especially if it was coming from people who have never done that before, so that you can help perpetuate the horn and keep it free and open for everybody and anybody who wants to listen. Thank you to all of you. Thank you, Dan, for being the only one responding this evening. Thank you very kindly, Dan, in Virginia. Much obliged, much appreciated. Thank you to everyone who supports day in, day out, week in, week out, month in, month out, and yea, verily, year in and year out. Thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky, moderators in the Horn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, through which every packet passes and every stream streams. Thank you. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org. ACACT.org is where you go to learn everything you need to know in order to advocate for an end to the Appalachian apocalypse that is mountaintop removal. ACACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.